Hello and welcome to the virtual event HERF here at Cigar Federation. My name is Dave from Cigar Jukebox. Thanks for joining us all today. And we're here with Paul Stulak from Paul Stulak Cigars.
Hey guys.
And behind the controls is the cigar surgeon, John. Hey, John.
Hey guys, what's going on?
So I'll let John have a sip of his beer there. Now, John, can you tell people how to join in if they want to join in?
Absolutely. So it's pretty easy. They just need to go to cigarfederation.com. We can make sure you're logged into your Cigar Federation account. Send me a message or just message me and just say you want to join the chat, and I will send you the link. And you simply click the link. Probably be a good idea to have some headphones on because otherwise you get a lot of crosstalk. And you'll pop in the event and you can chat with Paul Stulak.
As I drink a beer
Thanks.
and a scotch.
A beer and a scotch.
I'm double fisting for this one, yeah.
Well, that's more. That's an avid. You got to come on and see. Then you could compare how Paul is now, and then how he'll be at the end of the hour. It'll be a good sort of experiment.
Paul's an Easterner, and I don't know if you know this, Dave, but even among Canadian drinkers, the Easterners are known for their legendary liver and alcohol tolerance.
Thanks, John.
So this is just a snack for Paul. This is the, no big deal.
Well, I'm always drinking beer whenever I'm always drinking beer, but that's beside the point. But whenever we do these kinds of things, and I thought I'm gonna just go a little different tonight and have a scotch as well.
There you go. So just quick, I am smoking, for people that can see me, the Paul Stulak Screaming Red Sun Toro. I love this cigar. Bought it here in Australia, so everybody in Australia, you can pick up Paul's stuff here. No, I love this blend. I love it in this vitola. So this is what I'm smoking today. What do you have, Paul? Can you talk about what you're smoking?
I'm just smoking something new, a newer blend that we're trying. I felt it was too much pressure to smoke something that everyone else was smoking while we did this. So it was either a competitor cigar or something else that was unreleased. Otherwise, I would have been nervous. As I said before we went on the air, I would have been afraid of something going wrong on that particular one. Just kidding, by the way.
So how's the new one you're smoking? How's it going?
I'm enjoying it. It's way too early to tell right now. It's going to be another month or two before I think things age to where they kind of need to be. But very pleased with it so far. Very pleased. It's a complete departure from what we've been doing in the past.
Now, for those people who've listened to my podcast, Cigar Jukebox, I've had Paul on before to talk a little bit about, how he goes about, putting cigars together, blending, that sort of thing, what his process is. So, I mean, I guess using the new cigars example, as people are sort of joining in and having a listen and getting ready to jump on, can you describe a little bit about sort of how that cigar came together and what your creative process was around the new cigar?
Well, as far as the cigar itself, we just wanted to kind of, like I said, do a little bit of a departure from the sizes that we were doing and also go towards a slight box press so that the cigar will smoke entirely different than the existing line. And then as far as the marketing behind it, it's just going to be a departure from all of the traditional stuff we've done, the skulls and the crosses and all that kind of stuff. It's going to be a much more traditional approach. Because I always respected that side of the business, but just felt like I had to differentiate myself when I started. So I did what I did, and then the ads with the no tales of tobacco fields and all that kind of stuff, I truly, truly meant that, and I still stand by it. Some people kind of took it as I was saying something bad, and it really wasn't the case. It was sort of to honor the people who do have the history and the tradition. So this will sort of be a little bit of an homage to all of the people that I look up to in the industry, the people who've been around for, a million years.
So, I mean, like, when you went into the cigar, did you have an idea of what you wanted the blend to be, or did it sort of just kind of take shape over time? I mean, how was that part of the process?
I'm one of those people, I don't really know what I'm going to do in 5 minutes, right? So I kind of let things take shape. I like things to go naturally. That doesn't mean you don't have a plan or a vision for what you're doing. But I think that you just need to let things evolve to where they're naturally supposed to go, if that makes any sense.
No, yeah, I mean, and I have to say, for like my, and as far as the cigars go, my Screaming Red Sun, as people can see there, the construction is just impeccable on all Paul cigars, really. Great construction.
I've always said that, and some people may have heard it before, and I know that I've told you, Dave, is that I've always prided myself on that side of things, because taste is subjective. Just because I make a cigar that's a certain flavor, it doesn't mean that everybody's supposed to like that. And you try, of course, to have different variations in your line to appeal to different smokers, but the one thing that should always remain constant is that a cigar should smoke like a cigar. I always use the analogy of a bottle of wine. If you came home with a bottle of wine and you couldn't get the cork out, well, you wouldn't accept that. And it's the same thing with a cigar. So I never really understood when a person bought a cigar and they couldn't draw the smoke from it, or it burned funny, or, you know, all of the other issues that can happen with a hand-rolled product. But being in retail for almost 20 years, it kind of made me – it inspired me to say, hey, that's not acceptable. So let's come out with a product that the flavor may not appeal to every single person out there, but every one of them is going to smoke like a cigar. When there is an accident, which does happen in a hand-rolled product, we stand behind it and look after the person.
No, I mean, like I said, it's great to hear you say that, because I think construction at sometimes is sort of overlooked by a lot of people. But like you said, I mean, if you can't smoke the cigar, it doesn't really matter what the flavors are and stuff. So, and across the board, the construction on your cigars has always been, I found, very consistent. I haven't had any issues with any of your cigars. It's been very well done.
I think for the most part, we don't have issues. You know, like I said, it does happen from time to time. But I just, you know, some people kind of just never go back to the line. And other people, I mean, just contact me. You know, contact me directly. Let me know. Let me know. I had that issue just a few weeks ago with a guy. And I found out about it through a third party. He emailed me, and, hey, we sent the guy some cigars to make up for it. This is not acceptable. Can't pay that much money to enjoy something and not get to experience it the way it's supposed to be experienced.
Yeah, no, it's great. And I wanted to ask you, too, especially with the new cigar coming out, With is there a timeline on that? Like, where are you within that process?
I stopped doing the timeline thing because I was sitting there telling everybody that it was going to be a certain month, then another month, and I just felt like I was breaking my promise to everyone. And it's literally this one means so much to me that I just won't do it until I feel it's the moment. The moment is right. And we were kind of like everybody, you know, you're trying to make things happen for IPCPR. In New Orleans, and it just really, really wasn't the right time for us. So whether that's good or bad, I'm not sure, but it'll just be released when it's ready. And it shouldn't be too much longer. I'm actually just working with somebody on the final labels and stuff like that. It's somebody extremely, extremely reputable and known in the industry. I won't go into detail, but they've done some pretty outstanding packaging for people. And so we're going to kind of go to the next level with the tobacco, the cigars, and the final look and feel of the product.
Well, it's interesting that you say that. And what I think, you know, gets lost is the excitement IPCPR and seeing what everything's new. It's interesting sort of thinking about not wanting to rush it just to get it to IPCPR. You know, not try to rush something just to get it there, but, you know, waiting to make sure it's, you know, just how you want it.
Well, you have to. I mean, I'm I might as well change my last name to Mr. Mistake, because I made a lot of mistakes when I when I started and when I launched in Vegas. And, you know, we won the Best New Exhibitor Award, and a lot of the press and stuff started to write about the cigar. And, I mean, as much as you hope and you wish and you dream for that kind of stuff, you kind of aren't ready and prepared for it. And that onslaught of attention, it just makes you make decisions in a too rushed of a fashion, and you make mistakes and you hurt relationships along the way, and I won't allow that to happen anymore. I'd rather sell one.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh no, I was just wondering, is that a difficult balance trying to get, you know, make sure everything gets out, you know, in a timeline that it comes out right, while at the same time trying to, I guess, expand and trying to, you know, with all the buzz around, like you said, at that show, like trying to meet the demand while at the same time making sure the quality's there?
Well, it's not hard as you get going and you become experienced and you learn from those mistakes. But when you first start out, you don't know where it's going. You don't know if tomorrow somebody's going to need one cigar or 1 million. You have no clue. So it's very, very difficult to prepare for that. You know, you can do all kinds of projections and plans and stuff like that. It just doesn't work that way in this business, because you can't push a button and just spit more out on the other side of the machine.
Yeah. I mean, it's that handmade quality. And I think I was talking to you before, too, which I found interesting. I think it was maybe the first time you were on the show or on the podcast, was the idea when you're tasting cigars, you're trying to project what's going to be like in 6-8 months, and trying to sort of taste it in the present, but also trying to predict what's going to be like in the future. That's really interesting.
Well, that's very true. I've always said that. It's never mind what you're blending at the table at the moment. It's the vision that you have to have is the end product. And all of my idols and heroes in this industry, I really believe that that's where their magic comes from, in seeing what the end product is going to be before it's an end product. And that was something that I guess I was kind of consciously aware of it, but not enough to not make mistakes. And I want to change my name as Paul Stulak, not Paul Mistake.
Well, I'll tell you what's this cigar is magic. I love this Red Screaming Sun blend, and I had the people may know or may not know. Paul did one of these Red Screaming Suns in a Lancero for a Westside Humidor. Can you talk a little bit about what it was like to try and have the blend in Lancero and some of the, you know, challenges and stuff with making Lancero with the wrapper and things?
Yeah, that was just a very fun project that Gordon and the gang from Westside Humidor in Kansas had pitched to me, that they wanted to do a special size cigar just for them in a small quantity, along with a few other manufacturers. So they did the whole Reservoir Dogs theme with the Mister series, basically. The colors and stuff like that. So in any case, we got Mr. Brown, and they love the Red Screaming Sun blend, so they basically said, hey, can we do this in a Lancero? Well, I knew the issues that were going to come up with that, because Lancero is a tough cigar to roll, you know, not just to roll, but to get the flavors to balance, et cetera, et cetera. And then they want to do it in the red, which is Connecticut broadleaf. I mean, it's like, can you make it any more difficult on me or put any more pressure on me than that? Anyway, so I run it by Guillermo Pena, who does all my master blending along with me and runs the factory. And he just looked at me like I was crazy. And in his English, he said, you will be dead. That was his exact word, you will be dead. And I said, okay, well, just try this, try that. Let's make some tweaks, whatever. But let's try to make it happen. Again, I go back to what I said a few minutes ago: it's perceiving what it's going to be in the future. It's nothing to just roll the cigar today and say, hey, this works or it doesn't. It's where is this going to be in 6 months? So anyway, he felt I was going to be dead. And then one day I got a phone call, and he says, I think it's the most amazing cigar we've done.
Wow, that's quite a turnaround.
He doesn't like Lanceros, even though his dad, who has rolled cigars since, you know, so way, way, way back, rolled each one of them. And here's a guy like Guillermo, he doesn't even like Lanceros. It's just not his vitola. And he says, that's all I've been smoking. Well, I'm in Canada at the time, so I can't even try one. So by the time I get to Miami, we ship out the order, and there's literally one cigar left. So I had got to smoke one of these cigars. And then when I did their event in June and I got there, they had a box on the side there. So I actually got the box and smoked 24 of them. I gave one away. And they were great. And I'm not one who usually sits there and talks about how fantastic something I'm doing is, but I have to admit, I feel like we nailed that project. It just came out as good as it could be.
Yeah, I mean, in hearing you telling the story about putting that cigar together, you must have been. I mean, would that be one of the cigars you're most proudest of? Like getting that cigar out and having it be as come out as well as it did.
Well, it's a great feeling. I mean, no question about it. No question about it. I mean, sometimes you come up with something and it does well or it just does okay. But that one there, as soon as you smoked it, you just kind of knew this is like something very, very, very special. And the guys were floored at Westside Humidor. I mean, they were just ecstatic about it. It's one of their favorite vitolas, and they love the red blend. And for it to all come together and everyone to be happy, there's no better feeling.
Yeah, that's a tremendous cigar. I didn't know that story. I think for a while I think I smoked more of that cigar than you did, because
you absolutely did. Everybody has. Guillermo nailed every single one of them in the factory. He left me one, and I was fortunate to get that.
Oh. What happened to being the perks of, you know, having your name on the band? You got to get the perks, Paul.
It's overrated. It's overrated. It means nothing.
So, I'm sort of charting how the night's going for Paul and my little, you know, beer scotch experiment. So how are you going on both, Paul?
All three things are blending really nicely. Thanks for bringing attention to it, by the way.
Well,
it's
you
a good
know,
thing I didn't
I
tell
mean,
you about the glass of moonshine I have on the other side of the chair.
People don't know because it's Google Hangout, but Paul's actually surrounded by alcohol. It's just like a big pool, and he's on like a little island in the middle, and with just, you know, he just leans over either side.
Thanks, Dave. Anyway, that's going to conclude our broadcast tonight.
Now, I want to know what you're drinking for scotch, because I'm a scotch guy, and I'm curious what you're pairing with it.
That's an interesting question. I'll tell you why, because I've been on the road so much, and especially around the IPCPR time and after. And then I was in Toronto, actually, in Ontario, in Canada, because I finally got Canadian distribution from the guys at Noob Cigars. They're going to distribute across Canada. So I was with them, and we were doing a little tour through Toronto. And so now that I'm home, I'm going to be home for a few weeks to spend some time with family and just kind of unwind and get ready for the new cigar and before I go to Nicaragua. So long story short, what I'm drinking is a Nova Scotian whiskey. It's called Glen Breton. It's distilled right here in Cape Breton, which is about 5-6 hours away from Halifax. So I thought
now
it was fitting for a night like this.
That distillery just opened up recently, didn't it? That's
no,
first...
they've been around, no, 1992 or 4 or something like that.
Okay.
So, well, you're close, John.
just a little bit outside. A
couple years off, yeah. But it's a nice whiskey, and it feels like home. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, with IPCPR and going with the new cigar, your schedule must just have been crazy lately.
IPC PR is hectic for everyone, as we all know. I can't cry about it because it's everybody, and I enjoy it. I love it, so I'm okay with it. But yeah, it is a hectic time, and then I had a few events that fell kind of before it and after it, so it's just been kind of go. So it's nice to hang out with the one or two people who are watching right now, probably, and have a whiskey. Just kidding. I hope there's more than one or two. But it's nice to have a time like this, to be honest.
Thousands, Paul. Thousands are watching.
Oh,
one
okay.
or two.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
But, no, I mean, so how's the shift to be more focused in Nicaragua? How's that been? Did that take a long time to kind of have that shift? And how's that gone?
We've kind of been toying with that idea from day one, pretty much. Well, not day one, I shouldn't say that, but very quickly into the process, because as the production grew, and it was very difficult to maintain it and do it in Miami, and also economically. I mean, I love the United States of America. I love Miami. I love the history of cigars, but it is really, really tough to be competitive price-wise in Miami. That's the honest truth of the matter. And it's not just the cigars, it's the packaging as well. So in order to be able to offer people the best product that we can at the best possible prices that we can in a timely manner, this needed to be done. Guillermo is the nephew of Don Pepin, so basically it's one of his old factories that is being used. And just recently, well, it's actually as recently as a few weeks ago, Guillermo relocated from there to from Miami to there in order to oversee the production of the Paul Stulak cigars, the GP cigars, and a couple of other smaller lines that he does. So it was, to answer your question, it was tough, it wasn't easy, but it needed to be done. And we've ticked away at it slowly so that everything went smoothly and we didn't make mistakes.
Right. And so now is the move sort of finalized, or is there still, you know, odds and ends to
play? He's there now. I'm going to head down in a couple of weeks. When all the manual labor is done.
Good timing, Paul.
Well, I owe him one for smoking all the red Lanceros. Let's put it that way.
That's right. So, for you then, is that change how you split your time? Like, are you going to be are you going to be in Nicaragua most of the time, or how's that go then?
I'm still going to stick to doing the traveling thing and meeting customers and smokers and retailers, et cetera, but I will spend the time that I was spending in Miami. I still will spend time in Miami, but some of that is going to shift to Nicaragua for sure. Yeah. I want to start really taking it seriously. Like I said, to give people the best possible product that we can. There's no secret in my world that the cigars were high priced. And believe me, it just couldn't be helped. I always felt bad about it, but there was just nothing I could do. By doing this, I can put the cigars into more people's hands, which that's the goal of anyone, I guess, any manufacturer. But it takes time. It takes time.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm just a guy, you know, from a retail background who just had a bit of a dream and went after it. So it wasn't realistic to have it all figured out on day one at the IPCPR in Vegas in 2011.
Yeah. Do you ever think back on that, like where you were there and where you're at now, and just sort of, you know, what do you think are like some of the major things you've learned from going to that first IPCPR to like now looking to release another cigar on top of, you know, already the classic lines and all the other lines that you have?
Well, there's a million lessons learned in between, but I mean, like I said, obviously just doing things so that there's no mistakes and you don't damage relationships. So for anybody who know somebody with a relationship that I damaged. It was completely unintentional, but it just kind of happened. So therefore, those lessons that I learned are enabling me to release this new cigar properly. The right product, the right price, the right packaging, and doing the right promotion with people to get it into their hands.
Mm. Now, you just said before that you're now distributing to Canada. Was that a long process, sort of setting that up? And I mean, was that a pretty long process getting that distribution set up and how to...
I mean, I had the cigars in Canada, but just on such a limited basis that it was insane. I mean, I'm Canadian, and I had Canadians contacting me and saying, well, how come, you know, I'm here and you can buy these cigars in all over the U.S., you can buy them in Australia and even in Asia, and in your own home country, I can't buy your cigar. So it was very, very frustrating, but in Canada, you have to go through a distributor. You can't just sell directly to a retailer. So it was just a matter of time and falling in with the right company. And I didn't want to be lost in the portfolio of one of the larger companies, because that does happen. If you're one of the smaller guys, you do just get lost in a catalog of a sea of cigars. So I wanted somebody who was going to put the personal touch to it. And these guys, I just developed a great relationship with them. And I think they're going to do some great things and sort of do some promotion in Canada, because the Canadian people deserve it. The cigar market here is a healthy market, but it's also a very tough one because of the laws, like in many countries. These laws are just kind of putting a chokehold on people as to what they can and can't do. So being Canadian and doing this cigar that's available in the U.S. and other countries, I feel like it's sort of my duty to sort of try to make that to make a change with that. And I'm going to do what I can. I'm going to do what I can. But the Canadian stores, they deserve to have guys visiting their shops and doing promotions and stuff like that. I mean, like a few weeks ago, I mean, Alan Rubin was in Canada doing a bunch of shops in Toronto, which is just fantastic. Fantastic. It's you mentioned before we went on the air about Australia, you guys kind of rely on Google Hangouts to do events. It's a far place to go, but I hope to go there someday even and meet everyone who smokes the cigars. So, but first things first, I had to address the issue of the place where I'm from, which is Canada.
Yeah, well, if you ever come to Australia, you know, I could set you up, Paul. I'll protect you from all the snakes and stuff.
Well, based on the story you told me before we went on the air, Dave, I'm not going to stay at your place. I'm going to stay at the top floor of a hotel, okay?
That's right. Yeah, well, for those who don't know, before we came on air, I was telling Paul a story how a few months ago a python went into my neighbor's yard. And I might have indirectly ruined the chances for all of the nation to come see Paul Stulak with that story.
No, you didn't ruin it. It's just like I said, top floor of a hotel.
But I just want to remind people that are watching, they can join in. They can just, on the Cigar Chat, on Cigar Federation, send your email. John will send you an invite to come in on the HERF. We are doing virtual event HERF here with Paul Stulak, talking about his new cigar, distribution to Canada, large snakes, what scotch he's drinking. It's a wide-ranging conversation, so jump in. If you can't jump in, send your questions through the chat, and we will send those. We will get those out to Paul and try and get an answer for you. So, yeah, jump on in. Don't be scared.
We actually have a question from the audience here, Dave.
I'll go for it, yeah.
He says, this is Paul, this is your Uncle Phil, and he wants to know, why did you pick large ring gauge cigars and stay away from the smaller ring gauges except for the one Lancero?
Good question, Uncle Phil. Good question. I'll tell you, in all honesty, the reason that sort of came about in the beginning was because that's one of the things that I did recognize that we didn't have figured out. And so even though I did make a lot of mistakes, there's also things I feel very confident that I did properly. And we just didn't have the cigar. And until the Lord came about, which you're forgetting about, Phil, which is, I think, one of your favorites, if I recall. So it's not just the Lancero. We just didn't have it figured out. When we did the Lord thing, it came together very nicely, very smoothly, and everyone enjoyed it. It ended up becoming a staple of the line, and it was supposed to literally be just a small batch thing for one particular client. So we are in a position now that we will be doing a lot more of the smaller ring gauges, because I'm a big fan of them. As probably a lot of people out there are. I mean, it's some of the best smoking stuff. We weren't personally ready for it. And I feel very good about that decision. But we're ready to do it. We're ready to start getting creative, I guess.
And by small ring gauges, do you mean... Oh, yeah. So do you mean like 46, 48... that sort of size?
Yeah, and even
like
smaller. I'm going to do a 42 ring gauge, actually, in the new line, a Corona, sort of a 5x42 kind of thing. And another thing that we just dabbled with, I don't know if it's not really considered a small ring gauge, but we're actually doing, we did a promotion on with UrbanDaddy.com. I don't know if you guys have ever been on that, but it's a great great luxury site that offers what's called perks, and you can buy special stuff that's only available on their site. So we partnered up with them and did a sampler pack a couple of months ago, and it was just a tremendous, tremendous success. I mean, these guys just know what they're doing. And they said it was so successful they would like to do something else, and they said, well, how about if we do something even more different and offer something that's not available in the existing Vitolas. So what I'm doing for them is it's going to be a white blinding light in a 6x52 as opposed to the 56 ring. And what a difference in the smoke. It just completely, completely changes the cigar. And that's going to be available in a 10-pack within about 30 days.
And like with the like what you're talking about, and like with the red Lancero, I guess what's your philosophy around doing exclusives like that? Is like people approach you and you sort of talk through what they're thinking, or how do you go about when it comes to exclusives?
Well, I just love it. To me, that's the ultimate rush for me. When somebody says, "Hey, can you do something specific for me?" I just find that it makes me feel good that someone would entrust me to do something for them. So basically, it just starts out with the request and the logistics, and then it's just fun because you've got somebody else's input. I probably never in a million years would have had a red Lancero had it not been for the guys at Westside in Kansas. They inspired that, and that's the cool part of this business, is somebody coming along requesting something, and all of a sudden you've got something that has some legs, which the Red Lancero does, and we're definitely going to be revisiting that cigar very soon.
Ooh!
So I love it. I love it. I love the creative process with somebody else's input.
Now, Paul, if you do a Red Lancero again, you got to make sure that you're there early so you can hide some and you get more than one the next time.
Yeah, that's the goal. Again, there's the mistakes that I've learned.
Now, for people out there that really like Lanceros, because I know, some people that like Lanceros really like them. In your line, you also the white blinding light comes in a Lancero as well. Is that right?
Yes, correct.
Do you have any other Lanceros?
No, that's the white is the only one, and that one was just a personal thing for me because like I said, Guillermo's dad, he is a specialist at them, and I used to just get him to roll me some in the factory just for me to personally smoke and I kind of noticed that every single one of them, it draws perfectly, it burns perfectly, which is a very tough thing for a lot of cigar people in this industry. And this guy just really has it figured out as far as rolling them himself and training somebody to roll them properly. So I thought, we kind of have a gift here. So the first 100 boxes that went out of those, he actually signed them. So we have the infrastructure to do Lanceros, but as we all know, it's not a massive seller for anyone, even though it probably should be. You know, Lanceros really are sort of the undiscovered gem in this industry. But people get jaded because, like I said, the production is so bad on some of them, and I'm not really speaking specifically of anyone. It can happen to anyone. We particularly just have a little bit of an edge on that just because of his father rolling them for so long in his life, knowing the effort that's needed.
I saw another question from Uncle Phil as well on the chat. Well, he was asking, have you ever been asked to blend cigars for other manufacturers?
No, that hasn't come up yet. We've talked to people. Guillermo is very knowledgeable at what he does. The infrastructure is there now. It wasn't before, and that would have been just biting off way more than we could chew. It was tough enough to meet the demands of what we had to do, let alone take on other people's projects, other than small batch stuff, you know, like West Side or the guys in Albany when we did the Lord of Albany and that kind of thing.
That's interesting with cigars out, like I'm thinking in particular of the Larceny, which was a sort of a joint project with Sean Williams, and the Larceny with Sean Williams. Yeah. I mean, have you ever thought of that, like doing a, you know, at some point doing a collaboration with somebody, and that sort of like collaborative?
Oh, that would be the coolest thing ever. You know, that would be the coolest thing ever. And if the opportunity arose, my gosh, I would jump on it, of course. If it's with the right person, I think it would be awesome.
Mm. So
if you have any ideas, shout them out.
No, it's just interesting because I'm just talking as like a cigar smoker, but I think a lot of people see a cigar and they don't know, they don't see a lot of the work behind it. And I think it's cool to see collaborative projects to sort of, because I think what brings a lot of people to cigars is that sort of community atmosphere. And it's cool to see that even with the cigar makers and blenders, that sort of community atmosphere and coming together on things, it's cool to see.
It is very cool. I mean, but everybody sort of has to be on the same page. Everybody has to have the schedules that align. And then, like any business, there's egos involved, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that stigma is sort of dying out, but I personally believe that this industry, there was a lot of that for many, many years. It's slowly kind of dropping, which is great, and it's going to create products that are going to probably wow a lot of people, because it's like anything. As soon as personalities and egos and bad blood enter the equation, it's very tough to get creative. But I personally honestly see that lifting as of recently. Everyone's realizing, hey, let's all work together. And I mean, just look what people do for the industry as far as, you know, the fighting legislation, et cetera, et cetera. Smokers, cigar guys are starting to band together. The internet has obviously, you know, played a major factor in that, but that's what needs to happen as a whole in the industry. Everybody needs to start working together.
Paul, how was your experience at the New Orleans IPCPR versus the Vegas IPCPRs?
Well, if you want me to answer that truthfully, I mean, I'm not bothered that it's gone back to Vegas. It was, as we all know, it was a quieter show. attendance-wise than in the past. I'm probably not going to be the most favorite guy by saying that, but it's the reality of things, and I'm sure you'll agree with me. I hate to put you on the spot.
I guess one of the things we heard from a lot of people was that, I mean, obviously legislation changes are going to have a pretty serious impact to cigars and cigar manufacturers. But I know one of the big things that was echoed was the amount of get-togethers after the show, and you know, a lot of people liked getting together at the Circle Bar, having a cigar, having a drink, and chatting. And I think one of the things that was echoed across the board was a lot of people did, at least in Vegas, they do a lot of deals after the show versus this year where, you know, they kind of came to the IPCPR, did some deals, and then as soon as the show was done for the day, everyone kind of went their separate ways.
That's very true, and I'll just make a definition of the Circle Bar for anyone who doesn't know is basically a bar in the Venetian that everybody kind of congregates at after hours and stays way too long, and it causes a lot of people to feel very tired in the morning. Let's put it that way. So for anybody who's not a member of the IPCPR, you could actually fly into Vegas for the IPCPR and hang out at Circle Bar and kind of experience sort of a secondary IPCPR after hours. That's another thing I'll probably get in trouble for saying, but it's a fact. Yeah, that's definitely a positive in Vegas. I mean, let's be honest, this is a social business. You can't possibly just go there in the daytime and build a relationship talking to each individual client for 5, 10, 20 minutes, whatever that may be. It's after hours where you sit down in a comfortable chair and kind of have a drink and a cigar, and there's no time limit. So that's an integral part of Vegas, and I'm pretty happy to see it go back to Vegas. I think it's the right move. There's other changes that probably need to happen with IPCPR. It's not in my hands. I'm way too much of a new guy to probably voice those opinions, but people need to start embracing and accepting the younger brands, the lesser known brands, the brands that aren't consistently advertised. It's needed for the industry to remain strong and healthy as a whole. That has to happen. It has to happen, or what you're going to have is an IPCPR with a small handful of conglomerates. And the conglomerates have to have their place, obviously. I mean, they make fantastic cigars. But there's also a lot of little guys that people need to go give a chance. And I'm not even referring just, you know, to myself. There's a lot of cigars that I'll sit there and I'll smoke and I'll go, wow, like why isn't this kind of, you know, one of the number one cigars in the world? And it's literally just because people won't give them a chance. And from the people in the industry right down to the final end smoker and the retailer in between, they need to give these cigars a chance. That doesn't mean that, you know, any cigar that gets a label printed on a home computer needs to gain notoriety like in the snap of a finger. But you got to give things a chance. And I encourage anybody out there who's a smoker, once in a while, just give a shot. Step out of your box. Try something that you haven't tried before. Give somebody a chance. Give somebody a chance. You never know. You never know.
So, I mean, and I've asked this with a lot of cigar brand owners and blenders and stuff like that. So for you, like, what are some of the challenges and how do you break through in a market like that? In a market without, you know, trying to catch that cigar smoker, what are the difficulties and challenges around breaking through?
Well, the difficulties I just explained, and that is basically getting people to take your product and give it a fair shot. Give it a fair shot. That's all anybody can ask for. It's not that you have to like it. It's not that you have to think it's the greatest cigar in the world, but you have to be willing to try it. It happened in the wine industry, let's be honest. If you look at the wine industry many, many years ago, I mean, if you didn't have a French bottle of wine on your table or an Italian wine, you were sort of like, what do you, you know, people looked at you like you had eight heads. And in this industry, it's only been in recent history that people are embracing cigars from other countries. It used to be a predominantly Cuban world, basically. And look what's happened to that. So if the end consumer ends up giving smaller brands a shot, I think the same thing will happen. I think it'll just explode, and it just makes a healthier industry. And what was the other part of your question? I'm very sorry. You said the difficulties and challenges?
Yeah, I mean, something else I thought you said. Oh, no, I just the challenges in trying to break through a market with so many cigars out there and just trying to break through.
Yeah, well, you break through with your passion. You break through with your passion, and somebody I respect greatly in this industry. I'm not even going to say it because maybe they don't want me to say it, but basically it's somebody that's very respected in this industry that you would all know. And he said that you can't sit there and do the ad campaign that we're doing. You can't possibly do the swag that we're doing or the travel or whatever. But he said, your passion has to shine through. You have to believe in what you're doing, and you have to want to do it, and you have to stick with it. And that's basically what I've done, is I've just stuck with it through the good and the bad, up, down, keep going. And I can't stress enough, just learn from your mistakes, which just inevitably do happen. The person who gave me the advice said that no one made more mistakes than they did when they started. And now, I mean, they're like, you know, on top of the chain in cigars.
So I'm getting some tweets and stuff. People kind of telling me their favorite Paul Stulax. I've gotten the No Dress Code, the Red Screaming Sun, which I am smoking. I've gotten as well. And look, and this is where I'm at. This thing smokes like a charm.
Awesome.
White Binding Light. What are some of within your cigar? What are some of your favorites, or the ones that you like out of the Paul Stulax? What are some that you like, Paul, that you go to?
Like anyone, you would ask that question. It's a tough question, because I mean, not to use a cliche, but it's like choosing which child you like the most. I kind of like all of the line, and I'll tell you why, because I've been hands-on with each one of them. So if something didn't work, we didn't do it. I've never been the guy who came out with the cigar every single cycle, you know, or every month or two, which is commonplace in this industry. I mean, if you look at it, we haven't come out with anything new. I think it's been close to 2 years now. The No Dress Code was the last thing that we did. And that was intentional. That's one of the things that I didn't make a mistake on. I'm very proud of that. I always wanted to come out with something that meant something, that you really believed in that particular cigar, as opposed to coming out with something just for the sake of coming out with it, which I think has become a little too commonplace in this industry, because it's kind of necessary, because everyone's walking into a cigar shop saying, hey, what's new? As opposed to thinking kind of, hey, what haven't I smoked yet? Never mind what's just come out yesterday. What haven't I tried? And I'm going to go give that a shot. So in answer to your question, White Blinding Light has always been sort of my go-to, because it was just the cigar that was very special to Guillermo and I when we did it. But there's plenty of times where I'll just go back to the original, classic line with the Maduro Fantasma, which used to be called Ghost. Fantasma is Spanish for ghost, for anyone who doesn't know, and that got changed just because of a name issue with someone else. So all special to me, depends on the mood you're in, depends on what you're feeling at the moment, like all of us. I don't think the smoker is like they used to be 20 years ago. Like even when I first got into the industry with retail, you could literally sit in your shop and see a guy coming down the parking lot and kind of have what he wanted ready on the table. Those days are over. Those days are over. Even those older guys, they don't come into a shop anymore and just say, give me 10 of you know, what I had last time and the time before that and 20 years ago. I never envisioned in this industry when I started with the logo that I had that there would be guys who were older smoking them. And now I sit there and I'll see like a guy who's 70 years old sitting there smoking, you know, a Pulse Dulac cigar with a skull and a cross on it. You know, that's the cigar that I golf with. That's the cigar I had on New Year's Eve or whatever. And that makes me feel really good that there is people who break the barrier and try stuff that they probably wouldn't want to try.
John, do you have a Pulse Dulac go-to or one that you like?
You know, I'm excited because in an industry where I think there's a lot of market pressure to go for larger ring gauges, and I think, you know, anybody who's a manufacturer and says they're not going to produce what the market wants is doing really well for themselves, because if you can sort of look at the market and say, well, I don't want to produce what people are asking for, you have to be doing pretty good for yourself in a business. And I think, you know, the Lancero market, people who are cigar aficionados really love Lanceros. But what we've heard time and time again is that, you know, the average Joe who walks into a store isn't necessarily going to pick Lancero. That being said, you know, Cigar Federation definitely has a Lancero nation of a lot of people who love Lanceros. And I know that we carry, I'm pretty sure, the entire range of Pulse Dulac cigars on Cigar Federation store. So, you know, personally, I'm a huge Lancero guy only because, you know, I know how I've been to Nicaragua like, I think three times now, and I've seen blending and rolling in Lancero is a huge pain. It's a massive, massive pain. It's very challenging, very difficult. So to come out with a Lancero, you know, that takes guts, and to come out with a good Lancero is difficult. So, you know, I definitely respect and appreciate that you guys came out with the white blending light Lancero, because, I mean, that's fantastic. In my opinion, I know a lot of, like I said, a lot of aficionados love the Lancero line.
Well, the stigmas and the barriers in this industry need to come down. And like I said, everyone needs to start experimenting. And that's happened, don't get me wrong. I give everyone credit because this industry has changed so much, particularly in the last 5-10 years. But, you know, and it's attributed to, you know, like what you guys are doing with Cigar Federation. I mean, it's just fantastic. It's bringing a whole new group of guys to the world of cigars, and it's helping to break down the barriers, which it's time. It's time. It's happening, but probably should be happening a little quicker than it is.
Just wanted to say that I got a comment from, I make sure, Cigar Chief over at Cigar Federation, who's watching, who is just watching, loving the interview, and just says that he loves Pulse Dulac. So there you go. Want to get that? Yeah, want to get that out there, Cigar Chief.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you.
So
I know those guys. They're a fantastic bunch of guys.
I just want to say, like I said about construction, so I'm about there on the Toro, which I started a little bit before the interview, so it's been about an hour and a half, and the construction is still impeccable, and the cigar is still performing really well, which I think is really difficult in a larger cigar like a Toro, because sometimes you get build up and sometimes, you know, it sort of plugs near the end. But this is still smoking really well and delivering great flavor. So it's a testament to the construction and attention to detail that you guys have. It's phenomenal. I love this cigar.
That's great. That's nice to hear. And it never gets old. I get a lot of emails, and it never gets old, you know, when somebody compliments you. It's the greatest feeling in the entire world when someone says, hey, I like your product. They'll throw me a picture. You know, it's great on social media and stuff like that, but it's another thing when someone just emails you out of the blue and tells you a story. It's fantastic. That's why I got in the industry.
Do you get surprised about the reach of your cigars? I mean, in the sense that, like, you're distributing in Canada – you guys are both, John and you, are in Canada right now. There's people across the U.S. watching us on Cigar Federation, tweeting me, sending in their comments about what they like. I'm sitting in Australia, where they distribute it as well, you know, and they people really like them here. Do you ever sit back and are just sort of like, wow, I'm amazed at how the reach that these have?
Yeah, definitely. For all the trials and tribulations that I went through, I am extremely, extremely proud of that fact, is that to some extent we were very accepted in the industry, and that made that there's no better feeling than that for me. I'm not saying that we're one of the larger companies by any stretch of the imagination, but in our own small way, the cigar has been accepted, and it wasn't always easy. I'm not saying that it came overnight, but from the first trade show, there was just traction. There was traction. So I felt like we did a lot of things right. So when I said, you know, about a lot of mistakes, there's also a real lot of positive stuff that happened and that we did. And that really, really came together when Guillermo and I met. When Guillermo and I met, there was just that bond. There was that bond of, we're on the same page, and that's a fantastic feeling. And then to have, like you said, someone in Australia, someone in Canada, and knowing that the cigars are in a few countries around the world in a relatively short period of time, there's just no better feeling, and all I can just do is thank people. I'm big on thanks and appreciation, and I'm going to throw it out there one more time. Thank you. I truly appreciate everybody. I really, really do.
So for the people watching, we still have a little bit of time left. If you want to get a question in for Paul, you can either hop on really quick, or like what some people have been doing, you can send a question through the chat, or some people have tweeted me at Cigar Jukebox with, you know, stuff to ask Paul or just comments about his cigars. So, you know, if you're a bit bashful and don't want to jump online, you can always do that and have your questions answered. So that's always an option for you as well. I guess in the little bit of time we have left, Paul, for you, how is it – because I know with a lot of cigar brands and stuff, you have to wear different hats. You're tasting the blends and doing that, and you're deciding on the bands, and then you go to events, and then you're doing stuff like this. I mean, is it difficult to sort of find a balance between those things and not kind of run yourself into the ground, or how do you get a balance with all of that?
Yeah, that's definitely a challenge, because it's not like, you know, we have a team of, you know, 100 people here doing this. So you really just have to rely on your passion to sweep the factory floor, or blend the cigar, or sit down and sit with somebody in the industry and smoke the cigar and talk about it like tonight. I really have to put myself in a position where I'm as comfortable with that, or the privilege of being on a show like this, talking to people, and the passion gets you through that. It's just really that simple. You just love cigars, so you do it. You have to do it, and you just wake up in the morning and you do it. Get it done. Get it done, no matter what it is.
Hmm. Oh no, I mean this is just for me personally, but I appreciate the friendship with you, Paul, and you know, since you came on the show long, long ago on the Cigar Jukebox, and we're one of the few people that came on at first, and when I had the I think we were talking about the Angel way back then, but
that's correct.
But no, I really appreciate it, and then just staying in contact, you know, with cigar stuff and then ups and downs that we've both had during the last couple of years. So,
well,
run out of time, I want to thank you for that.
No, and I thank you, because, you know, when I mentioned Cigar Federation and what a good group of guys who are just doing great things in this industry, it's guys like you who are doing these podcasts, you know, your podcast, pairing cigars with music. I mean, gosh, this is like so unique that I can't even describe how cool I find it. So with guys like you, guys like the boys from Cigar Federation and stuff, it's going to make for some really, really great stuff in the future.
Now, in the time we have left, really quick, or not really quick, I guess, but in the time we have left, if people are listening to this and they're like, wow, I really want to get some more of these cigars. We are talked about Cigar Federation carries them. They used to have a sampler. I don't know if they have a sampler still, but they carry them. If they want to find out if their local place carries it or not, do you have a list of shops on your website, and how can they find that?
We do. We have a list on our website, but I mean, you can also always just contact me, and you know, I'll do a little plug here. I mean, go to your cigar shop and ask them to carry it if they don't. You know, go on the list, but also go to that cigar shop that doesn't have them and just kind of ask for them. It's very appreciated because it's not an easy industry to break into. It's not an easy industry to see the fruits of your passion and your labor. So when someone goes into a cigar shop and says, hey, do you have them, whether that person actually orders them or brings them in, that's sort of secondary. It's just the fact that the person is being asked, and eventually that person will come around and perhaps carry them. It might not be immediate, but they might in the near or distant future.
Oh, yeah.
Always just reach out to me personally. I just always stress that. People get really surprised when I sit there and I respond to an email personally. And I'm very humbled by that because, of course, I would answer it personally. And I would hope that I always can do that. I'm always just so humbled when somebody throws me an email and just tells me a little story or even says, hey, just where can I get them? I mean, hey, yeah, you can go on the website and see that. But there's just nothing like the camaraderie of an email. And I've made some great friends, people that if I walked by on the street, I wouldn't even recognize them. But we converse on emails as if we've known each other for 20 years. And that's the cool part of the industry. It's the part that we have to embrace.
Yeah, I second that. I mean, be sure to get Paul's cigars in your area if they're not already there. They're terrific, great cigars, great guy. Get them going. Get them moving.
Well, and I think that the new cigar will sort of break down a bit of maybe the stigma that had existed with the existing line, which is, you know, sort of the skulls, the crosses, and stuff like that. I think that the timing was right for that cigar to come out so that it appeals to a broader spectrum. The timing is right because we're in Nicaragua. The timing is right because the prices are going to be a lot more accessible to people. So just go out and ask for them, yeah. But always throw me an email. That's what I always tell people. Reach out to me.
And then they can find that on the website as well?
Find it on the website, paulstulakcigars.com.
Yeah, just check it out. You can see where you can buy it everywhere. Get some cigars. I'm really excited for the new one. I'm really excited to see it sort of go. Do you have an idea of how many sizes you're going to release with it?
It's going to be four sizes initially, and I won't get into the details of it yet because it's sort of going to be the whole thing is going to be a little bit of a surprise. I mean, there's been some leaks out there online from what I've heard as to names and stuff like that, but I'm just going to kind of wait so that it all happens at once, and because as soon as I started talking about it a little bit here, a little bit there, I ended up letting people down because it wasn't ready yet. So if there is minor tweaks and stuff like that, I don't want to be on record saying stuff anymore. I can say that the cigars are rolled. We're just sort of in the aging process and the packaging process. I love cigar packaging. I cherish. I mean, the traditional boxes right up to the ornate packaging that people do. I really cherish all of it. But I'm not an over packaging kind of guy, as you may see. It's presentable, but I don't think it's over the top by any stretch of the imagination. But this is just going to be something that encompasses everything that I've gone through in the industry, particularly the rougher patches, and that's going to shine through in the packaging and the overall feel of the cigars, including the way that they smoke. It's just sort of my redemption, I guess, is what it comes down to. It's my offering to people that were alienated or people who haven't tried it because of the stigmas that were created with the logo that I had. And we'll always do that cigar. The existing line is going nowhere. It does well. I'm very proud of it. But it was time to dive into the other world, other side of the world of cigars.
Well, I'm excited to see the next chapter, and I want to thank you for coming on, Paul. We're about out of time now. I really appreciate it. Put the time aside. How did in the end? How did the pairing go with the scotch and the beer? How is the pairing? How did it finish up?
Perfect. I've actually I'm a real beer guy, as some people know, and my scotch is empty, and there's still beer in the glass. So maybe I'm turning a leaf here.
Well, thanks again, Paul. Thanks, John, as always, as I thank John as he's drinking his beer so he can't talk. There he is.
Thanks very much,
thanks,
Paul.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Paul. It was a great talk. And, yeah, everybody be on the lookout for the new cigar.
Thank you. I appreciate it, John. I appreciate Dave, and I appreciate everyone who listened or who's ever smoked or will smoke one of the Paul's Deluxe cigars. Thank you.
Okay, so on. Thanks, John. Thanks, Paul.
Okay, guys.